Well, this morning we have a team from Almost Home here, and we're going to be doing another conversation just like we did when we had Safe Families here. And so this morning we have Sarah and Joy and Mel, and Mel's going to be chatting with me this morning about Almost Home and the work that they do. I believe, Mel, you're the board president. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Sweet. Awesome. Yeah. So Mel, you're the board president. And how long have you been with Almost Home?
Only since March of 2021. So just last year. Wow, it's bright up here.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. So since March of last year, had you been involved with Almost Home previous to that?
So I used to follow Sarah, literally. The areas that she would serve, I was pretty passionate about. This is my community as well, and from Worth. So I followed Sarah for a couple of years before I happened to finally be in a position to show up in her office and offer my services in my professional capacity for the organization. Being board president, I think this just went out. Oh, there we go.
Edge back.
And that turned really quickly into becoming board president.
Oh.
Yep.
Sweet. Okay. So give us an idea. I know that, I've been in the community for a little over a year, pretty much immediately found Almost Home, just kind of been following and kind of seeing what Sarah does and what you guys do. But give us an idea of what Almost Home does.
Sure. So I am neurodivergent and require some visuals sometimes to help me understand what's being talked about. So I do have a little visual for those who benefit. I know you can't see it, but I will definitely walk you through it. So I get asked this question a lot. We happened to just be invited last week to have a tent or booth at the Lumineers concert, and one of the things I wanted to do was make sure we could show people the impact that our organization is making, because as I talk about what we do, it's how are we impacting our community. So we impact the community in a few different ways.
Do you want me to hold it?
Sure, that would be wonderful. Thank you. So this 1,231 people, this board right now represents just what we've done in 2022. So I have to mention, Sarah has been doing Almost Home work since 2015 officially, but, you know, a little bit before that as that passion grew. So just in 2022, we have fed 1,231 people through our what we call Stone Soup Kitchen. And if you haven't heard of that, it is right down the street. We operate out of a live church, and that is really, if you have the mental image of a stone kitchen, a soup kitchen, really what we are, it's a gathering place. We have guests that are experiencing food insecurity, not necessarily individuals just that are homeless. So we have a lot of families that come and get to enjoy dinner with us each Saturday. And we run that with volunteer groups coming and cooking the food, and then come and serve the food to our guests. This is brand new. So we just started that in October of 2021. So after I became president, and I'm just, these numbers are astounding how many people we're feeding each week. This 767 down here, is what we call the loaves and fishes program of the organization. And really what that is across a couple different venues, a live church being one of them, we have closets, if you will say, per se. At a live church, it's actually our office, so we sit inside of the pantry as our office, but at the other locations, it's not necessarily occupied, right? There's not a person there, but it is a pantry or a closet with some of the basic essentials that folks need. So household items, hygiene items, and then non-perishable foods. And this is going up exponentially because on-site is our loaves and fishes closet. So as our friends are at Stone Soup Kitchen, come for Stone Soup Kitchen, you know, they're getting their needs met in those areas through the loaves and fishes. We've got a little 161 number here for Walk With Me. That program's really designed and dedicated to individuals who are unsheltered. So Sarah has been building a community and a reputation among the individuals that live in the homeless encampments. If you're from this area, you probably are aware of a few. And Sarah's been known by them for a few years and provides really one-on-one support, right? Everybody's needs are different. So it's have a conversation, she builds those relationships, and we kind of get them what they need when they need it. This 55 financial assistance, there are just a lot of individuals struggling, and that is not just individuals who are experiencing homelessness and food insecurity, but that's people whose utilities are getting shut off. That's people who cannot afford their car payments, and their cars are getting repossessed, and those cars serve as a home for some of our friends. So just financial assistance in that we take care of some of those, again, really critical basic things. And then we've got 33 in addiction support, and that covers a few things. I'm really, really passionate about addiction support, addiction services. There's quite a few of us on the team that are, and we serve in different ways like Narcan training. We do offer Narcan training, a couple routine offerings at a live church, but we also go out in the community. I'm looking to do some community-based Narcan trainings in Worth coming up here in the next couple months. So Narcan training for obviously families, those that are addicted also benefit from having access to Narcan. In addition to that, individuals who need transportation or some way to get to treatment, detox, recovery, et cetera, we pick up that tab, right? Let's not let those things be a hurdle to you going and getting help if you're ready to get help. Again, financial hurdle in affording to stay at those places. So it costs money every single week to remain at any of those facilities, and insurance only covers a small portion of the time that an individual actually needs in these places. So we try to pick up that tab just to, again, remove the hurdles to, if you're willing to stay and get better, you keep doing that and we'll take care of that. So just in 2022, we have provided assistance, 2,200 times through all of these different areas. And that's not necessarily just the people that come in and we don't, like, collect their information regularly, consider them somebody that we would support routinely. And I just love throwing this hashtag on here. If you follow Almost Home, if you have ever seen Sarah's posts, I add it to everything, Joy, all the team. Because everyone needs help sometimes. Like, that is like a foundational concept for us. Because all of us are only a very few small circumstances away from being in a situation that some of our friends are in. So, that's what we do. That's how we serve our community. And we're just down the street.
Yeah, right over here in the live church. Just,
I'm pointing the wrong way.
What is it, 90 or?
88th and Austin
88th
Avenue.
88th and Austin, yep. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. So you guys do a lot.
Yes.
I've met with Sarah a couple different times, and I think each time I meet with Sarah, I learn more of what you all do, and it really is incredible work. And one of the things that, our goal as a church is we don't always think that we have to recreate the wheel, that we would rather, like, if somebody has wheels rolling already, like, we would rather just come alongside and support and help. Where do you see, so I'm going to ask this question, then I'm going to kind of ask just more about, general information that you can just share, with us about, our, unsheltered neighbors, mm-hmm. our, those kind of stats and everything. But where do you see, the most help needed, at this point in time?
Sure. If I had to rank, take into the intersectionality of ranking what's the most important with what can we all do the easiest,
yeah.
Okay? And compassion, at a minimum, kindness. We just recently started really kind of nailing this, choose kindness at any chance. But all of us interact with the people in our families, our children's friends, their parents, right? It's a spider web of impact that we each have at home. And that is, I think, where it starts, is at a minimum, check yourself in maybe some of the pre-program of what it is you think about people in these kinds of situations. Because, again, if we think about how few situations would have to occur to us for us to be in this circumstance, and, our mind goes, that would never happen to me, or I would never let that happen to my child, you don't know what that will do to you and your family until it happens, right? So choose compassion, number one. Number two would be, if not through Almost Home, find something that, like, I can't stand seeing people hurt like this, okay? So for me, addiction and losing people to overdose is extremely frustrating, and it keeps me up at night, keeps probably a lot of our board and our team up at night. And arm yourself with education, arm yourself with information, come to a Narcan training, just be prepared to help these people in the community, your own families, your own friends, so on and so forth. And then from a like move to action type approach is get involved, right? So we have Stone Soup Kitchen, as I mentioned, is run by volunteers. I'd love to see a group of folks from Ridgeland Church sign up for a Stone Soup Kitchen dinner service and come and see what it's about. Because the idea that anybody should be reinventing any wheel is silly, right? Let's share what it is that we're doing that's working, what we've learned that isn't working, and partner in that, right? Especially because we are literally in the same community, same neighborhood. I mentioned, in particular, addiction services is a really passion of mine. It should alarm all of us that Oak Lawn in the surrounding communities, Oak Lawn has the highest overdose death rate. I run stats. I make infographics. Oak Lawn is struggling. Oak Lawn is struggling badly. So, just move to action is get involved and start really meeting people where they are, and it will clear or give you some clarity on helping them in ways that they need, right? The individual one-on-one support is really what's critical, right? It's not the last person I helped needed this, so I'm just going to give this to you because now I'm helping. It's actually sometimes more harmful than doing good when you give somebody that is not what's actually, what they need. So, those would be the ways I would ask, kind of make a call to action both at home and out in your communities.
Yeah, and that's, in a way kind of what we've been talking about the last few weeks is, we talked about, orphans, and then we talked about like the homeless and the poor and just the down and out, and, everyone's, created in the image of God. Everyone has a basic dignity that we
absolutely
cannot ignore. And that should be our, base.
Yep.
In scripture, just as a reminder, if you weren't here with us last week, we kind of unpacked it in scripture. Over 2,000 times, scripture talks about caring for the poor and the homeless and the down and out, which is like more than a lot of other things that scripture talks about. So that should say something about like how we should be responding, how we should be involved, especially in our community. And so you started to say a little bit about that Oak Lawn has the highest overdose rate out of any of the surrounding community. So just let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah. Can I tell you a little story?
Yeah.
Kind of ties together almost like all the different paths of my life converging to bring me here right now. So I grew up in a family full of addiction, and I'm talking maternal and paternal, but we're going to focus on the paternal side right now. Out of 7 children, 5 of them are addicts, alcohol or drugs, and I'm not talking marijuana. I'm talking, crack cocaine, heroin, et cetera. And on my maternal side, it was actually more okay, I think it's back on. So there's more folks my age on my maternal side. But 22 years ago, take you back to I'm in high school, riding home on the school bus, and we come up to, you probably know it, 115th and Ridgeland, coming home from Shepherd High School, okay? And on the corner is a man selling roses in one of those buckets. Again, if you're from the area, you probably have seen those individuals really up and down 111th. I've seen them my whole life. So 115th and Ridgeland, buses at that corner. I realize I recognize that man holding the bucket of roses, and it's my dad, who I have not seen in over 5 years. He left my family when I was 11, and due to drugs, alcohol, my mom, you have to make that choice. Unfortunately, dad chose addiction, and many make that choice. And I, before the bus could pull away, I grabbed that window so fast, I thought I was going to break it. I pull it down, and I start yelling out the window, "Dad." And he turns around, clearly confused, and because I just keep yelling, "Dad," and then I yelled, "Ed." And he turns around and sets the bucket down, turns around opposite where I am, sets the bucket down, and just walks away. And all I could think in that moment was, of course, all I wanted was for him to see me. "Oh, my God, where have you been? I've been looking for you." I can't tell you how many times after school I drove myself to Oak Lawn Public Library to look up when I learned that they have their yearbooks there. Look up pictures of him from when he was in high school. Like, it very just, I was looking for him, basically. So I see him. He's like, "I'm out of here," right? Okay, let's repeat what must, let's have the conversation with ourselves of what must a person be going through to him as well as myself to in that moment, just in my opinion, just kind of give up, right? I spent a lot of years thinking, how do I help? How do you change the trajectory? Or at a minimum, just be there, right? Because he in that moment, all I was looking for was a wave. You weren't going to get on the bus and we were going to go to lunch. That, the shame that must he must have felt in that moment. So fast forward a couple of years, multiple years. I'm in my 20s now. And I see some individuals standing on the corner that trigger me to remember my dad. And I'm like, I got to do something. And now it's the Hunter, or it's a Southwest Highway in Harlem. Okay? Again, it's my backyard. I start frequenting there and asking them, like, "What do you need? What can I get you?" No one wants my help. I don't understand this, right? This is confusing to me. I'm offering assistance to somebody who clearly looks like they need assistance, and they don't want it. I repeated this numerous times. I am persistent, if nothing else. And I finally decided I'm going to just get everything I could think they could possibly need, put it in the back of a truck, pull up to, there was this parking lot that I often saw individuals kind of congregating. I even saw individuals sleeping in that parking lot. And I sat there with a truck full of goods for hours. Nobody wanted my help. I watched people walk by down into an encampment that was below that bridge there and not accept my help. It's repeating for me. Why? Why don't they want to come to really like unpack and process that is they don't know me. They don't know my intention. They don't know whether I'm judging them, so on and so forth. The shame that they must be feeling for the situation they're in. And then I find out they don't want my help because somebody is already out there giving them everything they need, and that's Sarah. So very quickly, all in this period of time, it was like, okay, they trust her. I'll go help the person that they trust, and, you know, let's bring our resources together. And isn't that really what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. right? So fine, I found somebody who was doing it better, and in giving back to these communities in this way, right, that's provides some healing and catharticism for myself. I don't actually remember your question, but I know that essentially getting here and doing this and being in Oak Lawn and these areas, right, it's here. We were asking about the overdose number. So thankfully, my father is in recovery. My dad is in recovery. We do not have a relationship, unfortunately, for other reasons. But that watching him go through that experience from afar, all of his siblings that have struggled the same way, actually we've lost two of them to substance abuse disorders, and they're from here also. They're actually from Oak Lawn. So Oak Lawn, highest numbers, overdose deaths in, essentially put a pin in this, stick it out like 7 miles, and I just went in a big circle, and I collect kind of all those towns. And Oak Lawn does have the highest rates, and believe it or not, the age range, this was astounding to me, the age range most impacted by overdose deaths is the 50 to 70 range. It's actually, I put that in two buckets, 50 to 60 and 60 to 70. But those two age ranges actually make up more overdose deaths in this area than the young people, right? Which is, again, the mental image we have of who is struggling with addiction. And it's just not the case.
You may not know the answer to this, but is there an understanding why that's
no.
the case?
Unfortunately, no. So there's two things we're up against. not only do I have to go get that data myself, I go get that data from the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. I cull their database of all of their death certificates and do some data analysis. That's the professional skills that I'm bringing to the table to know what's happening. Now, why is it happening? I could name a bunch of things, right? But I don't know that that would be different for Oak Lawn than any place else. The numbers, if anyone doesn't know, shot up, obviously, during the pandemic. Isolation is horrible for people suffering from addiction. And so the why is, we're all impacted by the same thing. So I would definitely say isolation. I would say some communities, it takes a bit for them to recognize that this is happening here. And Oak Lawn, I'm from around here, right? So I don't have a problem necessarily saying Oak Lawn.
I'll even say what you're communities put blinders on because they don't want to say that their community has problems.
Yeah, and it's just not the case. So the faster we acknowledge it, and the faster we all figure out how to combat it, all of us in our own homes, in our own families, in our own communities, the better we'll be. But the numbers are still trending pretty high. So I would say overall, for 2022, as things have been, resources have been ramping up, social service programs, they're depleted, right? There's organizations that people rely on for these services that if they can't get the help there, and now organizations like ours are trying to supplement that, but we are not necessarily built to be offering mental health services, medical attention, so on and so forth, right? We're Maslow hierarchy of needs, if you're familiar with it. We're like making sure they're fed. We're making sure they're alive. We're making sure they have shelter to sit in when the weather could kill you. And that's survival mode. Nobody deserves to live in survival mode. And just so many people are, and so many people are in silence, unfortunately. So, like, we all got to, like, look around and see the people that are hurting and ask them if they're okay. Yeah. If that's another call to action, it's asking someone if they're okay.
So if you guys don't follow Sarah or Almost Home about what they do, I mean, I don't think I've seen a nonprofit that has as much community support that you guys have. I mean, a need is put out there and it's usually covered literally within minutes.
I say people are waiting. They're staring at their computer saying, what does Sarah need today? What do Sarah's friends need today? Because it is that fast. It is that fast for everything. We are blessed to have support in that way. But it'll never be enough, right, to give these folks what they need. But absolutely amazing community support and following that Sarah has built over the years. And I have loved to just jump right in there and show them just a wider range of people who are committed to their communities in this way.
So thinking about, like, a church organization, what would – I mean, you kind of already said, like, basic, you know, compassion, you know, action, you know, get involved. If there was another organization that's like, hey, we want to come alongside and we want to support Almost Home, like what in your head, I mean, I want to even talk ideal, like what in your head would be your ideal?
In a picture-perfect Walgreens world, right, we, and this isn't necessarily for a church, but like I think about like what are the big things we could do? Anything in the arena of housing. If anyone here has people buying or selling, no one can afford anything. In addition to that, you can't afford rent. If you're homeless and you can't get a job, you can't get an apartment. If you can't get an apartment, you can't get a job. Okay, so like we're in that situation. So anything that organizations that have what I call a brick and mortar, you have real estate, you have space, is carving out areas for any type of service. In a perfect world, it would be housing. I'm not asking you to start building condos inside your church, but like the idea of using that space in some alternate way to serve this community would be ideal. That'd be a good one.
So I'm going to open it up to questions.
Sure.
Does anybody have any questions for Mel regarding Almost Home or the neighbors that they serve or anything?
Yes. Great question. Thank you. So she asked if the church was interested in doing a Stone Soup Kitchen dinner service, what that looked like. So the volunteer group responsibilities are to plan the menu, purchase the items to fulfill that menu, and prepare outside of the church. So one, we do have a lovely little kitchen, but it can't be made up to code to cook there, right? So financial implications, it's pretty pricey to get it ready. However, we have the food prepared elsewhere. A lot of people also cater, do catering. So you bring the food with you or have the food delivered there, and then you and a designated group of people, we do allow children beyond an age, just as long as they can, you know, actively participate safely. And you come on site that day, 3:30, 4-ish, and Saturdays is our only time right now that we offer dinner service, and you stay till about 7:30 for cleanup. And it entails your group, you know, ushering our friends in, getting them drinks. We really run it more like a restaurant. You go be seated, and we will bring you the food as everybody is getting sat at your table. So kind of you run that whole thing, but we're on site, of course, to support and supplement, and then cleanup. So we would love to have a group from the church come. I think have some dates still open for the end of the year. No? Okay, so do we have 2023 dates open? Okay, we have all 2023 dates open. So before we post that, because as you mentioned earlier, people are waiting for Sarah to post things, let's connect, grab a date, grab a couple dates that folks are interested in before we go and open them up to the public, because they get absorbed pretty quick.
Good. Any other questions? I guess we'll go to Mary Beth, and she has a mic. Oh. Look at that.
How do you know how many people to buy food for? How do you prepare?
Sure.
And if you have food left over, then do they get to take the food with them?
Absolutely. Okay, so I would tell you one of the favorite things is that when we have food for them to take home. So we aim for 60 people. So as we opened, in October 23rd of 2021, we had 14 guests. We are up to 55. Is our highest number. We're aiming about 55 every week is what we serve. So we ask the volunteer groups to prepare for 60, and ideally a little bit more, because a lot of our friends do, this is their next meal. This is their meal for the next day. So we have leftovers, as well as we have a lot of volunteer groups that picked up on something we did. We prepared to-go lunches. So not everyone takes those. So that doesn't need to be for everyone. So like half, 30, if divide and conquer, right? Another way to give back is just to do the lunches. And it's PB&J sandwiches, a snack, a juice, a piece of fruit. Again, because that's sometimes that meal that folks can have later or the next day. And so 60 for food, 30-ish if for the lunches. And yeah, that's all you need to bring. And then we do all the paper stuff. I should remind that. We have all the paper plates, the forks, the napkins, the drinks. We take care of the drinks and cups, et cetera.
If a particular group doesn't do the, the sack lunches or whatnot, would you be open to another group making those and just dropping those off on
Absolutely.
A Saturday
yep.
for that?
Okay. Yep, they're a hit for sure.
Don.
Sure. I think he asked if we have any partnerships with local beds or pads. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would say we are all equally aware of each other and the community that we serve, but not necessarily do we actively work together. I would say COVID drastically changed the way beds and pads serves their communities, and we might fit in there sometime in the future, but right now, really, the housing that they were providing people was hotels, and that's just a little out of our price range to do year round. We do offer hotel stays to friends that live on the street during weather that could end your life, but not year round, right? So no current partnerships, but definitely leverage the fact that at some point they had shelters. They ran the shelters, and now they don't. So trying to pick up that in between, that gap. Absolutely. Yeah, I have a pretty blunt way of thinking about this, that trauma is the gateway drug, okay? Mental health and trauma and the intersectionality of that with addiction and living in these circumstances, they are one in the same, really. Like, let's not even say they're intersecting somewhere. They're running parallel on top of each other and sitting on top of each other. So absolutely, the population that we serve that is homeless is very often the population that is also suffering from substance abuse disorder and is also suffering from untreated mental illness. Absolutely. So I actually get asked a lot, right? So then what are you doing to fix that? Well, I'm not God, and I don't have millions and millions of dollars to implement programs to do this. But what we do is we meet them where they're at. What needs do they have right this very minute in front of us, and what can we kind of check off? And then if we are in a position to obviously send them on for more aid elsewhere, definitely folks with addiction problems, probably speaking of most prevalently here. But mental illness is my next one. I would love to find some partners who offer services. If we could, we've talked about a therapist, right? Kind of almost having an in-house therapist that could provide some type of mental health for folks when they do spend time with us, because we cannot ignore the intersectionality of that. Yeah. No, I definitely think there's some doing it better than others. So, like, if I thought about right off the top of my head, I'm really passionate about LGBTQIA youth, and I can think of organizations that are, what I'm going to say, covering all the bases, right? They're getting them housed and getting them into some type of job corps type thing, and getting them the mental wellness help that they need, and getting them schooling if that's what they need, right? There are some programs out there that are equipped to do that in those ways. I have not seen any super local here in Oak Lawn doing it, and that's sometimes the barrier is the individuals we serve can only travel so far, right? Now, could we send them somewhere to receive these services? Yes, but we might be doing more harm in putting them someplace that they're not familiar with. So there's like a case-by-case basis of what we could do, but yes, there are organizations out there that are doing that. And I know we've got some big goals in the mental health area for sure.
I have a question. Sure. So as you've been doing this work, and you know, we can be honest about the fact that communities sometimes don't want to recognize that there are that some of their citizens, some of their residents of their communities are struggling with this, or they throw out these, like, oh, they come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not really a part of our community. They come from somewhere else. Have you all interacted much with the local villages or towns? And if you have, what kind of been the reception?
Sure. Well, I'm from Worth, and they know who I am because I send emails regularly to the mayor, because I just... we're a small community. I'm like, I get to do that. So I have repeatedly been knocking on the door of my community, right? I am born and raised in Worth. Just this year, when I ran those numbers for the overdose deaths, one happened in Worth, and it was my friend. So I am very passionate about my community understanding this is happening here, right? I come into Oak Lawn, and I tell you all the same thing because I know it is. And a lot of our supporters live in Oak Lawn. But in my community, I'm knocking on the door saying, at one point it was, can we put up a mini pantry right next to the village hall? They did actually approve that, but then we have a big on-site pantry, so we're not doing the little mini pantries, but they were receptive to the idea of, like, food insecurity is a real thing, and it is a real thing here, as well as literally just Friday, this Friday that just passed. I met with the director of the Worth Public Library, and she has agreed to do staff training on Narcan training, which is also what I did for the Oak Lawn Public Library. That Narcan training was for all of their staff. They do like a whole week of everybody kind of comes together and a bunch of learning is done. We did a Narcan training there. In addition to the Narcan training to the staff is the Narcan training out to the communities. So we do the Narcan trainings outward to the community from a live church, but again, it's the folks who follow us that are getting that, right? I need out in the communities, the people who do not know Almost Home exists, to start paying attention and hearing me. So if I have to repeat that process in each community, then I will find somebody in each community to help me facilitate that process and be knocking on doors. So, yes.
Gotcha.
Hello, Sarah. So I was pleasantly surprised when I found that one of our friends is a member of the LGBTQIA community. And in addition to that, he was alive for the AIDS crisis. So he lost a lot of his friends back in the 80s. And we kind of came together on just desperation. I'm listening to stories. I've known stories my whole life of people who did live through the AIDS crisis. And I just thoroughly enjoy this man. I know they know who I'm talking about. Fast forward a couple weeks later, and I have a friend who works at a hospital, and this individual that we serve showed up at that hospital for a job interview wearing an Almost Home shirt. And my friend knew, hey, that's Almost Home. Text me, was like, what do you think about this individual? Glowing reviews. As a human being, this is what I think about this individual, and I trust him with any person to take care of any person that my family or myself. And he ended up getting the job, which with that job came housing. He lives in the home where he serves, supports, and takes care of, I think, multiple individuals. And it, really, that took no effort on my part. Right, that literally just took being present and existing and putting things together and like seeing this individual, stopping, listening, talking to him. He is a great guy, and just being able to kind of connect those two things, that's been a special story for me, especially. Yeah, thank you, Sarah.
Well, they have a table out back. They're going to kind of be hanging out for a little while. You can pick up some information, ask them more questions. But just like with, you know, Safe Families, you know, as we talked about, as our care team and as our board have even talked about, like, how are we going to be involved in the community? It really is first, what other organizations are already in the community doing things that we can just partner with? And then maybe down the line, you know, it's more like, you know, we're going to put on the back left wheel of the cart, you know, to kind of, you know, maybe help something go a little bit further than it would, you know, but everything's kind of already been constructed and we're coming alongside. So they're going to be here. Can we thank the team and Mel for, you know, being here and talking about and the incredible work they do. I mean, it blows me away. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And let's do a Narcan training. We can do that. Let's schedule that. We need it, right? This is down the street from where we're doing it. We're doing it there. We're doing it here. We're doing it at Oakland Public Library. And let's get that number down.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that. So I'm going to pray for us as we go. And then, yeah, if you have any questions, you can chat with them at their table at the back. God, we are grateful that we get to partner with other people that have a passion for the people that you have a passion for. So God, I would ask that you would help us to see our friends, our neighbors that are food insecure, that are unsheltered, that are struggling with addiction, not as anyone less than us, but as somebody that really is us. Maybe just a few degrees of crisis. So God, help us to have that compassion. Help us to have that love. Help us to come alongside and have the compassion that isn't just pity, but sees the potential of life in somebody. So God, we would ask that you would help us and that you would call us to your good work in your name.